Overnight, a new fire in the Hollywood Hills grew quickly, forcing chaotic evacuations there.
Oh, really? I hadn't heard. Tell me more, NPR.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
I don't know how I came here
tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Okay.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. Barely. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We're also streaming coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets. On the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and available on most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell and exhausted fellow from bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us very much today on the Bradcast. We are very happy to be here with you. I will, boy howdy, if the rest of the year turns out to be anything like our first week back, Desi Doyen, I mean, I know I've been saying buckle up quite a bit on the show these days, but I really hope that our listeners take it to heart. Unless they happen to be in a car trying to evacuate an encroaching wildfire and they are completely gridlocked in traffic, and then, well, maybe then you should unbuckle up and run for your lives. Sadly, as too many folks out here in Los Angeles were forced to do over the past few days out here. Happily, we did not have to do the run for your lives portion of that last night. But,
for which I am very thankful.
But, yes. But funny story. So after covering the gusty, sometimes hurricane force winds and accompanying out of control wildfires out here in Los Angeles all week long since we've been back from our holiday break, pretty much. And not long after getting off air from yesterday's show, in which, among other things, we spoke with our friend John Amato of the Crooks and Liars blog, who lost his home down in the Palisades fire on the coast. And before we could even get that show fully posted to bradblog.com and to all of our affiliate stations and out to social media, etc., well, we were informed first by a neighbor in the form of a photograph, and then by the city of Los Angeles that, well, there was a huge fire now raging blocks away from here in something called Runyon Canyon, here in the foothills of the Hollywood Hills. Indeed, I was able to step out my back door onto my back patio where, for those following along all week, you may recall there the huge tree limb that flew over from our neighbor's yard and crushed our backyard canopy just a few days ago when the windstorms first started kicking up. Of course, that tree limb is still there because we've sort of been in this...
Been a little busy lately.
Been a little busy this week. Well, from that back patio, I could see enormous plumes of orange smoke and flames licking the sky. Now, my first thought, of course, Desiree, was quick, let's get the show posted before we have to bug out. And given all that we've reported on over the past few days, and even that all that we have experienced from the high winds and the deadly flying projectiles to waking up to black skies on Wednesday morning, I think that was, well, yeah, Wednesday morning. And then speaking to our longtime friend who had just lost just about everything but his life the night before on this program, well, suddenly the idea that our home, too, could soon be burned to the ground within minutes, well, if it hadn't been real before then, boy, howdy, does that have a way of making it become real, suddenly very real when you see those flames and that smoke and so forth.
Yes, it makes it very clear what other people have been experiencing of how fast these wildfires are moving. So, yes, that does tend to focus the mind.
But I'd hate to not have gotten yesterday's show out to everyone first. And so that's what I was sort of scrambling to do. As it turned out, I was able to post the show, at least to Bradblog, if just barely. That was about it. We then escaped to our LA flagship radio station out in Glendale in the valley to use their Wi-Fi to get the show out to the rest of the world and to regroup and to figure out what and where to go next. A longtime friend was very nice to invite us to stay at their house, our new climate refugee center. But the process of getting out and the process of figuring out if you had to get out and the calls that were coming in repeatedly from the city of Los Angeles warning us we may have to evacuate soon, like on all of our phone, my cell phone, on your cell phone, on the landline, which was great, by the way. Thank you very much, City of LA. I've heard I haven't heard much, to be frank, in the media over the past 24 hours or so, but I have seen some, I've heard some, you know, on social media and so forth, that there has been criticism of Los Angeles, of the mayor, of the governor, from the idiot incoming president of the United States. All I can tell you is we were glad to get those notices to get out. Those repeated notices to get out and to tell everyone in our neighborhood to get out, which made its own interesting drama as we were all trying to get out from these tiny little streets here in the Hollywood Hills all at once. But we got the notice. We did get out. The fire was knocked down by LA firefighters very quickly, within a few hours, as I understand it, because the winds had died down by then.
That made all the difference.
A huge difference. Because, that, for one thing, it allowed them to take the helicopter tankers, back into the sky and do airdrops to put out that fire.
We're talking about very steep terrain that is extremely difficult for fire crews to navigate in the middle of a fire.
They never could have. It's this very narrow canyon that was, you know, completely aflame. I don't know how they would have fought it had they not had helicopters that have been able to come in and drop the water.
But it helped not have winds that were driving the fire 5 football fields a minute.
Had that fire broken out about 24 or 48 hours earlier when we were having the worst of those winds, at points, as we've reported all week, at sometimes hurricane level gusts, well, I do think we would be telling a very different story than we are trying to tell today. As exhausted and confused as we may sound, it would have been a very different story if told at all, given that the fire was on that, you know, very steep and narrow hill in the canyon. And they just wouldn't have been able to fight it with hoses on the ground, presuming that there would have been even enough water to try and do so, had they tried to do so. But by morning, all was well, and at least for that fire, I should note, that it is being called the Sunset Fire. And a lot of people heard about this before we had even heard about it, apparently, because we started hearing from folks. Apparently, it was national news quite quickly. And folks who know that we live in Hollywood or near Runyon Canyon were very concerned and checking in with us and, frankly, knew more about it than we could from our vantage point.
It's like watching a football game. It's better to watch it actually on TV because you can see everything. Whereas when you're right in the middle of it, it's a lot harder.
Yeah, well, actually, it reminded me of the 2008 Democratic National Convention, believe it or not, We were there in, where was it, Denver, Colorado, for Obama's DNC. And I remember thinking at the time, man, it's really hard to cover a convention when you're at the convention. It's much easier to cover when you're not there. And I have learned it's easier to cover a fire and a mass evacuation when you're not in that mass evacuation. People around the country seem to know more about what was going on in my backyard than I did even. In any event, by morning, as I said, the evacuation order was lifted. We were able to, unlike too many folks out here right now, we were able to return to our home in good order, and all is what I would call well today, at least for us, as exhausted as we might be. But that evacuation experience, even though we have we've discussed it, we've planned it, we've talked about, you know, we've warned folks on the air repeatedly to do the same, to prepare your go bags, even if you don't expect a disaster, but to have a bag with your critical documents, your passports, your what else? I don't
know. Birth certificates,
things
credit
like that.
Credit cards,
yeah.
Cash, other important documents that you must have or that will be helpful or very difficult to replace. Those are really important, plus prescription medications and other car titles, things like that.
Yeah, and, you know, we've talked about that on air, but it is pretty terrifying when it's actually happening, no matter how well prepared you might think you are for such an event. And, you know, so I've been thinking about today, Desi Doyen, lessons learned. I'm shocked. I should say we're from our home studio today. Thankfully, we were able to get back. It was unclear whether we'd be able to have a show today at all and a Green News report, which will be coming up later this hour. So everything is a little bit bumpy, a little bit choppy here today as we're trying to get our sea legs. But I have been thinking, in these hours about the lessons learned, Des, and I know that you have as well. So I had some thoughts I want to share. You had some as well, I know.
Yes. So first of all, for anyone, it's really important to get your go bag ready so it is ready to walk out the door at any given moment so you don't spend precious minutes looking for those documents. Have it in a place. Have it ready to walk out. You can get that list at ready.gov. That's the federal government's website for preparedness. Also, your state will have a emergency preparedness website as well.
And by the way, I thought that we were kind of safe. Here in this location, there's a lot of, we spoke with Heather Digby Parton, who lives out in Santa Monica. She says she lives in such a concrete jungle. She was not worried about these fires where she lived. I kind of felt similarly, although we have a lot more trees and vegetation and so forth around us. But it didn't feel like we were in a place that was exposed like so many of the places we've seen out there. So my point is, even if you don't think you need to be prepared for a disaster, whether it's a wildfire, a hurricane, a tornado, an earthquake, maybe it's good to be prepared anyway.
Yes, I would agree. And, you know, when you have some time, it really is good to think through not just the important documents that you might need, but irreplaceable stuff. Like, for example, I realized after, you know, we successfully got out, I did not have time to gather things that were irreplaceable for me, like my grandparents' wedding photo from 1937, you know, our Presidential Scholars Medals, you know, things that, like printed photos that you can't get again, videos that can never be found again. I was reminded of John Amato's experience where he lost priceless memorabilia, priceless cherished items from his life, and they're just gone now. Another lesson that I learned was that it's really helpful to get to know your neighbors. We are lucky to have very, very wonderful neighbors. We all look out for each other. And I was actually able to go over to my neighbor's house and gather some very important documents and items for her because she could not do so for herself. And then we had another neighbor who was also out of town who actually kept us all posted on the progress of the fire watching TV because we were all busy trying to get loaded up and
He was actually the most valuable neighbor. We have, you know, sort of in a group text, as you talked about, The guy who was out of town was the most valuable, as I said, because he wasn't here. He could watch what was going on, whether it was on CNN, whether it was on the local news that he was able to stream where he was and tell us which direction the wind was moving, which was really helpful. So I think what we need is a designated survivor who must always be out of town at all times to tell us what is going on.
Another thing that I think is important is that we discovered that was the scariest part of all of this. You get everything ready to go, you load it up into your car, and then you discover that there you have traffic gridlock.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I don't know how cities can better deal with that, because everybody was given the notice at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, with a fast-moving fire, everybody has to go as soon as possible, but gridlock was a real issue.
It was, and I would say folks took the evacuation orders very seriously.
Which was good.
In the community. And I don't know if they would have done so had it been a couple of days earlier, but boy, after the last two or three days of what we've had out here in L.A., people knew what was going on when they got that signal to get out.
Yes, go ahead.
Well, they knew, you know, that this was serious, that this was not something to monkey around with, and they left. They went. And they were all very polite to each other, even though nobody could move their car anywhere on our tiny little narrow streets. Somehow people worked together. Somehow we got out. Now, one thing that I wasn't sure of as we were trying to get out and really having no idea, where am I going? Am I going right? Am I going left? I had no idea. Most people were going right. So I came up with the idea of, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go left.
Well, what we found.
And that actually worked out well because there was no traffic to the left. Now, mind you, as I'm driving sort of up the canyon, I'm thinking to myself, well, wait a minute. Why is there no traffic here? Am I going the wrong way? Am I going to get to the top of the canyon and the road's going to be cut off? But I don't know. Sort of a metaphor for my life. Everybody was going right. I thought I'd go left.
Well, it does point to another thing that you need to have in your go bag, paper maps. So you talk with your family, so your coordinates, so your kids and your elderly neighbors all know where to meet in case you all get separated. But really important is to have that paper map in case cell service is down so that you can plan multiple routes, multiple exits from your neighborhood because, one exit might be blocked up. So you need to know the side streets and other special streets in order to be able to get out.
I will note that the internet was not down. So luckily we were able to use Google Maps to try to get some sense of what roads were shut down and weren't. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Thankfully, this was not a disaster of that proportion,
right,
as it might have been for, we are in a 40-year earthquake drought here in Los Angeles, but I won't mention that today.
Well, people in hurricanes and storms,
yes,
and floods,
yeah,
the cell service gets knocked out there too. So having that paper map so you're not reliable on cell is really important.
As I noted, the repeated warnings from the city and then the mandatory evacuation notices from the city were excellent. Thank you, whoever was responsible for that, Mayor Karen Bass or the fire department or whoever it was, as were, of course, the firefighters who knocked down that Runyon Canyon fire, the sunset fire, as they call it. I don't know why they call it that, although it did begin just after sunset. Maybe that's it. I don't know. But they did a great job of knocking it down on that very steep hill amid a very densely populated neighborhood. Had that fire gotten out of control even more than it was, and gotten out of that canyon area, which is sort of a park, so there's no houses there, but had that gotten out into the wild, into the neighborhood, as I said, it would have been a very different story today.
Yes.
So thanks to everyone who checked in with us via email and text and social media, et cetera, listeners and friends and family. It was greatly appreciated, all of you. We're fine. It was occasionally also overwhelming trying to both look out for ourselves and letting folks know that we were okay. But the outpouring of concern, sometimes from folks I hadn't heard from in years, was all greatly appreciated and somewhat amusing again in that, because the Runyon Canyon sunset fire was apparently national news, Most of the folks contacting us knew much more about what was going on with that fire than we did. But we're all out. We're safe. That's good news for us. Not such great news for many others still struggling with this here in Los Angeles.
Yes, we have many friends who have lost their homes. And just another call out to folks that if you would like to help, please check into legitimate charities and other organizations. You can find them through the Los Angeles City website and the Los Angeles County Emergency Response, that you can help folks locally who have lost everything in this tragedy.
A commenter named PDX Walker at Daily Coast, who responded to my posting of yesterday's show over there, covering the fire, speaking with John Amato, etc., said, quote, Los Angeles native here. My first apartment after I got my first real job out of college and the community college I graduated from are under evacuation watch. We have relatives who evacuated to Orange County tonight. There has been nothing like this in L.A. in my 70 years on this earth. He wrote, important note, added, there is nowhere safe from climate change. No matter where you go, there it is. Yep. And Desi Doyen will, of course, have more on that in our latest Green News report coming up a little bit later this hour. As I said, we were able to put it together somehow in record time earlier today. We'll have that for you later. For the moment, while we were lucky, too many others were not. And the fight against the largest fires in out here in L.A. is continuing today. At this hour, according to the L.A. Times, five people have died, but officials say the death toll is likely to be higher.
And as we've been talking, the CNN announced that the death toll has now risen to six.
There
and
you go.
That officials do say the true death toll is unclear.
Unclear now because we're still in the middle of this. More than 2,000 structures now have burned, structures being homes and businesses, and at least 130 1,000 residents are still under evacuation orders, unlike us. Experts say LA is not yet out of danger and that the fires have the potential to be the costliest wildfire disaster in American history. Firefighters continue to battle multiple major fires on Thursday. Much of L.A. County remains under a red flag warning through Friday night. The L.A. Times broke down some of the various larger fires. The Palisades Fire, that's the one out in Pacific Palisades on the coast and westward along the Pacific Coast Highway toward Malibu. That has now burned more than 17,000 acres and a bunch of homes, businesses, and landmarks in Palisades. The so-called Eaton Fire, which is in the foothills above Altadena and Pasadena, that one has just been terrible as well. That has now burned more than 10,000 acres and many structures in both Altadena and Pasadena. By Thursday morning, some of the mandatory evacuations had begun to lift. City officials notified residents in Glen Oaks Canyon and Chevy Chase Canyon that it was now safe to return to their homes. That is no doubt good news for a lot of people. The Sunset Fire, I mentioned, that one near where we live burned 60 acres. Had no idea it had actually burned that much. It also triggered mandatory evacuation orders in Hollywood and in the Hollywood Hills until Thursday morning when those orders were lifted. The Hearst Fire has so far burned more than 800 acres up in the area around Sylmar in the northernmost suburbs of Los Angeles. LA fire officials said on Thursday that thousands of homes appear to have been damaged or destroyed in the firestorm in Pacific Palisades alone, an estimate that would significantly heighten the scale of the disaster. Officials are still calculating the losses, but the preliminary estimates are quite grim. On Wednesday, they said more than 1,000 homes had been lost to the Palisades fires, and now roughly 1,000 more to the Eaton Fire in Pasadena. L.A. Fire Chief Kristen Crowley said the Palisades Fire is one of the most destructive natural disasters in the history of Los Angeles. As noted now, at least six people have died. Five of them, at least, were in Altadena, where the Eaton fire exploded on Tuesday night, giving residents little time to flee. Well, we know what that is like. Firefighters on Thursday were continuing to fight the Palisades fire 3 days after it was sparked. That has burned, as I said, more than 17,000 acres. And still fighting the Eaton fire. Growth of the Eaton fire, however, has been, quote, significantly stopped, according to the L.A. County Fire Chief Anthony Marone during a news conference on Thursday morning. But officials say that crews are still struggling with the Palisades fire, where our friend John Amato lost his home, with firefighters facing 60-mile-per-hour winds overnight. So the winds had died down here a little bit, but over on the coast, they were still continuing. Officials say they hope calming winds throughout the day on Thursday will help crews to boost the containment of that blaze. The Hearst Fire, the one up in Sylmar, charred about 850 acres. That one is just 10% contained as of Thursday morning. And while the winds have diminished, much of L.A. County, as I noted, remains under a red flag warning, with forecasters warning of critical fire weather through Friday night. Out-of-state resources are continuing to roll into fire zones on Thursday, reportedly. Thank you, out-of-state resources. Mayor Karen Bass noted on Thursday, quote, "This is absolutely an unprecedented historic firestorm," as she described it. But she added, "We are all hands on deck." L.A. County Sheriff officials are working to get a count of the fatalities in the fires, but they have been limited because of the continuing dangerous conditions in the fire zones. They are not yet able to go house to house and see if everyone is okay there. Unlike during the catastrophic conditions on Tuesday night, when wind gusts of up to 100 miles per hour were recorded, on Wednesday night, it was thanks to the aircraft that were able to make water drops on that Sunset fire near us, which broke out shortly before 6 p.m. on Wednesday night, before officials ordered a mandatory evacuation of the area swath of Hollywood north of Hollywood Boulevard. Officials urged people to remain vigilant. Thousands of residents across L.A. County remain evacuated, as noted. L.A. County Sheriff Robert Luna said at least 20 people have been arrested on suspicion of looting homes in evacuation zones. That's not good. But as noted, wind speeds had weakened across the L.A. region on Thursday morning, with isolated gusts still reaching up to 35 miles per hour in the Malibu area, much of which of that area had already burned about a month ago in the so-called Franklin fire. But the reprieve from those winds is reportedly expected to be brief, according to authorities. Winds are anticipated to strengthen again on Thursday night. Quote, "We get a little bump up in winds as we get another little push of offshore flow," said Mike Wofford, the meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Oxnard, California. He says nothing like we saw Wednesday with the gusts of 80 to 100 mile per hour winds, but certainly enough to present some issues for the fires. He says it's kind of like a day on, day off sort of thing, at least until we're in the middle of next week. We're going to be in that pattern. Late Wednesday, the National Weather Service downgraded the fire weather outlook for the region from extremely critical to critical. So that's a relief. It's only critical now. Wofford said LA residents should be prepared for a succession of sustained high wind events that could intensify the fire risk. Humidity levels remain low, very low, and no rain is in the forecast in the coming days. As we noted yesterday, I think, Los Angeles has received just 0.1 inches of rain since last May.
That's 250 days ago.
0.1 inches. Our average for this point in the year should be more than 4.5 inches. The UCLA climate scientist Daniel Swain said on Wednesday this has the potential to be, at least collectively, the costliest wildfire disaster in American history. Even just the Palisades fire on its own may become so, he said. On Blue Sky, he noted, quote, adverse wildfire conditions will resurge somewhat today. Very low humidity, stronger winds, though not as bad as Tuesday across Southern California. Unfortunately, another period of offshore wind now appears likely next week as well. So we are not out of this yet out here. We will continue to cover, as warranted, of course, and as long as we are able to retain access to microphones throughout. Some of the other news of the day and Desi Doyen's latest Green News report are all still ahead on today's quickly gathered post-evacuation ramshackle gathered broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial. It may still be hot.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Are you ready for that great atomic power? Will you rise and meet your savior in the air? Will you shout or will you cry when that fiery small high? Are you ready for that great atomic power?
Yeah. Thought I'd cheer you all up about the LA fires with that reminder that things could be worse. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. And in fact, back in the 1950s, things were worse. There was a very real fear that it could have been very, very much worse. In fact, we came very close to that. And the story that I have been trying to get to all week long, and to hell with it, to hell with Donald Trump's court battles and other nonsense. We'll return to that next week, no doubt, and undoubtedly over the next 4 years. But I want to tell this story today, and you'll see why in a moment if you haven't heard it already. The world was in the grip of the Cold War back in 1952 when a nuclear reactor began melting down. That reactor, located at Chalk River Laboratories in Ontario, Canada, just over 100 miles northwest of Ottawa, had suffered an explosion on December 12th of 1952. Radioactive material had escaped into the atmosphere, and millions of gallons of radioactive water flooded into the reactor's basement. Now, thankfully, no one was injured in that explosion, but the Canadians needed some help to disassemble the reactor's damaged and melting down core. And obviously, it needed to be done quickly somehow, and hopefully safely somehow. The United States at the time sent a 28-year-old guy by the name of Jimmy Carter to help out. Yes, that would be the same Jimmy Carter who is much better known for being the nation's 39th commander-in-chief. And until his passing late last month, at the age of 100, the U.S.'s oldest living president. But his service to the country began when he was a teenage plebe at the U.S. Naval Academy and continued for 4 decades after his presidency. According to Jillian Brockell for The Washington Post, back in early 2023, after Carter had announced that he would be entering home hospice care, of course, only to go on to live for another nearly 2 years. In the years after graduating from Annapolis in 1946, Carter was promoted to lieutenant in the Navy, and he took a dangerous assignment aboard a submarine. He was away from his young bride, Rosalynn, and their growing family quite a bit. It was in those years that President Harry S. Truman desegregated the military. While Carter's submarine was docked in Bermuda, British military officials invited white members of the American crew to a party, and at Carter's urging at the time, the entire crew refused to attend because it was segregated. In 1952, Carter was then selected to join an elite team to help develop the Navy's first nuclear submarines. Once he had trained his crew and the submarine was constructed, Carter was to be the commanding officer of the USS Seawolf. Then the partial meltdown happened up at Chalk River, and then Lieutenant Carter was one of the few people on the planet at the time who was actually authorized to go inside a nuclear reactor. Carter and his two dozen men were sent to Canada to help. Because of the intensity of the radiation, a human could spend only 90 seconds inside the damaged core, even while wearing protective gear. First, they constructed an exact duplicate of the reactor nearby. Then they practiced and they practiced and they dashed into this duplicate, quote, to be sure that we had the correct tools and knew exactly how to use them, said Carter in a 1976 memoir. Each time one of the men managed to unscrew a bolt in the actual reactor, the same bolt would be removed from the duplicate, and the next man would then prepare for the next step, bolt by bolt. Eventually, it was Carter's turn. He was in a team of three, quote, outfitted with white protective clothes. We descended into the reactor. So it sounds like they were lowered into it, kind of like Mission Impossible, as I understand it. And they worked frantically for their allotted time, which was, in this case, 1 minute and 29 seconds, where Carter had absorbed the maximum amount of radiation that a human can withstand in a year, at least according to the numbers at the time, as they understood them. The mission, however, was successful. The damaged core was removed, thanks to Jimmy Carter and his squad. Within 2 years, that core had been rebuilt and it was back up and running, for good or ill. For several months afterwards, Carter and his crew submitted fecal and urine samples to test for radioactivity, but, quote, there were no apparent after effects from this exposure, Carter wrote back in 1976. Just a lot of doubtful jokes among ourselves about death versus sterility. But in an interview with historian Arthur Milnes in 2008, Carter was not as cavalier. He said for 6 months, his urine tested positive for radioactivity. Mm. Quote, they let us get probably 1,000 times more radiation than they would allow now, he said. It was in the early stages and they did not know. Carter returned to preparing to command a nuclear sub, but soon fate intervened. In July of 1953, his father died of pancreatic cancer. Pancreatic cancer would also eventually kill his mother and all three of his siblings. As the eldest child, Carter sought an immediate release from the Navy to take over the family business. After 7 years of service, and given what he did inside that melted nuclear reactor, I would say after 7 years of incredibly brave service, he was honorably discharged in 1953. But the incident had a lifelong impact on his views of nuclear power. His biographer, Peter Bourne, said that as a young naval officer, he had approached it in a, quote, very scientific and dispassionate way. But Chalk River showed him the power of nuclear power to destroy. Quote, I believe this emotional recognition of the true nature of the power mankind had unleashed informed his decisions as president, said Bourne, not just in terms of having his finger on the nuclear button, but in his decision not to pursue the development of the neutron bomb as a weapon. If only everyone with their finger on that button had such personal experience and could be trusted with that button. I had hoped to cover Jimmy Carter's extraordinary life and his accomplishments a bit more over this past week by way of reminder of what a real president is and does. But, you know, fires and Trump happens. But Jimmy Carter was celebrated on Thursday at the Washington National Cathedral in D.C. for his personal humility and public service before, during, and after his presidency. During a state funeral featuring the kind of pageantry that the 39th U.S. president typically eschewed, All of Carter's living successors were in attendance with President Joe Biden, the first sitting senator to endorse Jimmy Carter's 1976 run for the White House, delivering a eulogy. Biden and others took turns praising Carter's record, extolling his character. Quote, he built houses for people who needed homes, said Joshua Carter, a grandson, who recalled how Carter regularly taught Sunday school in his native hamlet of Plains, Georgia, after leaving the White House. He eliminated diseases in forgotten places. He waged peace anywhere in the world, wherever he saw a chance. He loved people, said Josh Carter. Jason Carter, another grandson, praised his grandfather and his wife, Rosalind, who died in 2023. He wryly noted the couple's frugality, such as washing and reusing Ziploc bags. Desi knows what that's like. And the former president struggles with his cell phone, which I know what that's like. Hi, Mom. Anyway, he said they were small town people who never forgot who they were and where they were from, no matter what happened in their lives, said Jason. He chairs the Carter Center, a global humanitarian operation founded by Jimmy and Rosalind after their time in Washington. Jason Carter also extolled his grandfather's far ahead of its time record on climate and the environment.
As president in the 1970s, as you've heard, he protected more land than any other president in history. 50 years ago, he was a climate warrior who pushed for a world where we conserved energy, limited emissions, and traded our reliance on fossil fuels for expanded renewable sources. By the way, he cut the deficit, wanted to decriminalize marijuana, deregulated so many industries that he gave us cheap flights and, as you heard, craft beer. Basically, all of those years ago, he was the first millennial. And he could make great playlists, as we've heard as well.
The extraordinary gathering offered an unusual moment of comity for the nation in a factionalized, hyperpartisan era, bringing together rivals with sharp differences for at least one meeting with every living president in the same room together. According to AP's coverage, former President Barack Obama and President-elect Donald Trump sat next to each other on Thursday, talked for several minutes, even shared a laugh. As Trump went to his seat before the service began, he shook hands with Mike Pence in a rare interaction with his former vice president, the one that he encouraged his supporters to hang just 4 years ago. Karen Pence, however, the former second lady, did not rise from her chair when her husband did to greet Trump. Good for you, girl. Vice President Kamala Harris, who lost to Trump in November, she entered afterwards. She was not seen interacting with him. And good for you, girl. But either way, Jimmy Carter bringing people together, even in death. All politics were not left outside of the cathedral, however. Biden, who will leave office in 11 days, during his eulogy, he repeated several times that, quote, character was Carter's chief attribute, and said that Carter taught him the imperative, the quote, everyone should be treated with dignity and respect.
Jimmy Carter's enduring attribute, character, character, character. Because of that character, I believe, is destiny. Destiny in our lives, and quite frankly, destiny in the life of the nation. It's an accumulation of a million things built on character that leads to a good life in a decent country. Life of purpose, life of meaning. Now, how do we find that good life? What does it look like? What does it take to build character? Do the ends justify the means? You know, we have an obligation to give hate no safe harbor and to stand up to what my dad used to say is the greatest sin of all, the abuse of power. And that's not about being perfect, because none of us are perfect. We're all fallible. But it's about asking ourselves, are we striving to do things, the right things? What values? What are the values that animate our spirit? Do we operate from fear or hope, ego or generosity? Do we show grace? Do we keep the faith when it's most tested? For keeping the faith with the best of humankind and the best of America is a story, in my view, from my perspective, of Jimmy Carter's life. The story of a man who never let the tides of politics divert him from his mission to serve and shape the world. The man had character. Throughout his life, he showed us what it means to be a practitioner of good works and a good and faithful servant of God and of the people. And today, many think he was from a bygone era. But in reality, he saw well into the future. A white Southern Baptist who led on civil rights, a decorated Navy veteran who brokered peace, a brilliant nuclear engineer who led on nuclear nonproliferation, a hardworking farmer who championed conservation and clean energy, and a president who redefined the relationship with a vice president. To young people, to anyone in search of meaning and purpose, study the power of Jimmy Carter's example. I miss him, but I take solace in knowing that he and his beloved Rosalind are reunited again. And to the entire Carter family, thank you, and I mean this sincerely, for sharing them both with America and the world.
President Biden eulogizing President Carter on Thursday morning at the cathedral in Washington, D.C.
I think the biggest quote, the most important quote that I have ever heard or seen from Jimmy Carter was that he said in a biography once, "I have one life and one chance to make it count for something. My faith demands that I do whatever I can, wherever I am, whenever I can, for as long as I can, with whatever I have, to try to make a difference."
After the morning service in D.C., Carter's remains, his four children and extended family left on a return trip to Plains, Georgia, on a Boeing 747 that serves as Air Force One when the sitting president is aboard. Carter will be buried in Plains alongside his wife, Rosalynn. Rest in peace, Mr. President. You deserve it, even if we may not have deserved you. Green News Report and a quick show note are next on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is serving you. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you. Well, I don't know how we did it, Desi Doyen, but I think somehow we are going to land this plane. I didn't think it was going to get landed today. In any event, let's get to it. Show note afterwards, but first, our latest Green News Report.
We don't have enough fire personnel in L.A. County between all of the departments to handle this.
Extreme wildfire crisis now most destructive in Los Angeles history.
There's a clear trend towards these faster spreading, hotter burning, more destructive, more deadly wildfires.
Climate change is intensifying extreme fire conditions. Plus, President Biden designates two new national monuments protecting sacred tribal lands.
All of those intensifying stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
While everyone else is deeply concerned with what's going on in Los Angeles right now, Trump is handling the tragedy like the statesman that he is.
He's laying the blame on California's Democratic governor.
In a social media post referring to the governor as news scum and writing, he is the blame for this.
Yeah. In the midst of chaos, Donald Trump is taking action by opening up the strategic nickname reserves.
Thank you, sir. One finger salute. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, well, we've had a pretty harrowing 24 hours or so. We were forced to evacuate last night, which was kind of fun. And but I should say, we are back now here in Hollywood. All is safe. The
yes.
fires, at least in Runyon Canyon, are out, and we are fine. What do you have for us today?
Well, obviously, there has been truly staggering damage in and around Los Angeles. At least five people have been killed and many more injured in three major fires that broke out in the LA region in just 24 hours, fueled by historically dry conditions and hurricane force wind gusts. More than 2,000 structures destroyed or damaged. Emergency resources stretched very thin, even with pre-positioning of firefighting assets. Municipal water systems are straining, not designed to handle the extraordinary load, with fire hydrants in the coastal suburb of Pacific Palisades running dry. The Palisades fire is now the worst, most destructive fire in the city's history. In a Wednesday press conference addressing the deadly Eaton fire east of L.A. near Pasadena, the fire chief there said that no amount of water could have stopped the blaze.
We could have had much more water with those wind gusts. We were not stopping that fire last night. Those erratic wind gusts were throwing embers for multiple miles ahead of the fire. And that's really what caused the rapid spread of this fire.
Fire crews are also battling several brush fires around the region as well, like the one that we evacuated from. California Governor Gavin Newsom declared a state of emergency. President Joe Biden has officially approved a major disaster declaration for the state, unlocking federal resources. Biden was in Los Angeles to dedicate two new national monuments in California on lands sacred to Native American tribes, honoring their combined stewardship and permanently protecting the lands against mining, drilling, and other extraction activities.
You're not suggesting he started the fires, are you?
I am not.
Okay.
Climate Central reports that the LA wildfires have been intensified by conditions linked to human-caused climate change. A warmer atmosphere sucks more moisture out of the landscape, significantly increasing the risk of extreme fire behavior. This is also the state's rainy season.
In air quotes.
But virtually no rain has fallen in 250 days.
Yep.
A sharp contrast to the last 2 years when multiple winter storms pummeled the state. Plus, extreme wind events have increased dramatically in frequency in the region. Here's climate scientist Dr. Michael Mann on CNN.
It's the synergy between that natural occurrence, the Santa Ana winds, that immediate factor, and the underlying dry conditions that are definitely related to a trend of drier conditions in California and the western U.S. caused by human-caused warming due primarily to the burning of fossil fuels.
President-elect Donald Trump and Republican politicians used California's tragic disaster to attack the state's leaders, falsely and bizarrely blaming them for the fires and lying about the state's water management policies, with little pushback from corporate media. The difficulty that a well-resourced city like Los Angeles is having in fighting multiple major catastrophic disasters at once underscores the unprecedented new abnormal of climate change. The fires even damaged parts of the city's flood control infrastructure, which will need critical repairs when and if seasonal monsoon rains return. United Nations scientists and disaster experts the world over warn that no country is preparing fast enough for accelerating climate impacts, from storms and floods to droughts, heat waves, and fires.
Thank you, Desi Doyen, and thank you for being right about just about everything over the past 15 or 20 years. We could use your support at bradblog.com/donate to keep these sorts of reports and warnings on your public airwaves. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Like another perfect day.
Another perfect day in L.A.
Isn't it, though? Hey, by the way, before I get to the show note, Des, you said, so there's been a lot of talk about Jimmy Carter sort of doubling the size of the protected federal national lands?
Yes. Up until this week, President Carter was the most conservationist president in U.S. history.
Uh-huh.
But remember, we talked about that story just a minute ago about President Biden designating two new monuments in Northern mm-hmm. and Southern California to honor lands sacred to Native American tribes. So that means that now President Biden has now conserved more lands and waters than any president in history.
Mm-hmm.
And he also created the largest wildlife corridor of protected lands in the lower 48.
Well, isn't that just like Joe stepping on Jimmy's exit like that? Anyway, thank you very much, Desi Doyen. As mentioned, a quick show note. I know that we'd recently been off for an extended holiday break, but we will be off again on Monday this coming week, thanks to an appointment that I am unable to work around or reschedule. And so I just wanted to mention that in advance before you heard a rerun on Monday and you got worried about us, given the ongoing situation here in Los Angeles. And the fact that listeners have told me they got worried in the past when I wasn't here without advance notice. Even when there wasn't firestorms everywhere around us. So I just wanted to make sure you knew that. Consider yourself notified. We will be back thereafter, of course. But I'm sure it'll be a slow few news days between now and then. Right?
Oh, if only.
Yikes. Okay, that's it. Thanks to Desi Doyen, our producer, for, as I said, helping to land this plane. I wasn't sure we were gonna, given the circumstances. So thank you very much, Des. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It is always appreciated, always an honor. If you missed any portion of today's show, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. And as noted, that is all made possible by those of you who hit a donate button over there or go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves. Drop me an email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com, and you will find me on all of the social medias, including Blue Sky at The Brad Blog. But you can bother Desi over there instead. She is Green News Report.
Yes, please. Come by and say hi.
That's it. We will see you at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
From the